This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 16th, 2022. I'm Caleb Brown. Comedians trying to navigate a world where comedy itself is judged through a partisan lens have had, well, mixed results. Comedian Lou Perez writes about comedy, politics, and what used to be funny in his new book, That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore, on the death and rebirth of comedy. We spoke last week.
In about the past 6 years or so, I feel like comedy has taken a beating. I have many thoughts about why comedy, in broad sense, just ceased to be particularly good for a while. I feel like it's coming back. Do you agree with that? Do you have that sense?
I mean, I definitely feel that comedy is coming back if it hasn't gone anywhere for the past 6 years. Because, you know, as a comedian, I'm sort of in the thick of it. So I spent a lot of time creating comedy instead of, you know, just being a consumer of it. So I think if you're a consumer of comedy and you were looking at, you know, the places you're supposed to look for comedy, like late night shows, Comedy Central, Hollywood, you know, that sort of thing, you might, you know, turn around one day and say, what's going on? What happened here? But I think that a lot of the more interesting stuff is definitely happening online. And that's kind of where I, you know, cut my teeth in comedy and in you know, video production and that sort of thing. And I think ultimately, I mean, it seems like that's what's going to save us is more independent creators out there who thankfully have the technology and the means now where, you know, you're able to grow an audience that's able to fund your projects. And, you know, you turn around, you're like, oh, wow, look, I'm a working comedian now, but I'm not on any shows. I'm not in any movies, but somehow I'm still able to do this stuff. So for my book, That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore, on the death and rebirth of comedy, it's definitely a positive look to the future and a positive look to where we are now, too.
What happened? I mean, between, you know, so many people attribute this to Donald Trump making comedy not funny, and people have many thoughts about why that is. What do you think?
Well, I noticed something in 2016 when Donald Trump won the presidency for the first time. I'm just kidding. when he won, I noticed a number of, you know, sort of those interesting think pieces going around that were asking the questions, you know, what is the role of comedy now under a President Trump? And when I read that, you know, I automatically thought, well, shouldn't it be the same role it was under President Obama, under Bush, under Clinton? You know, why is it implied that there has to be a change here? And I think what sort of became clear is when Donald Trump was viewed as an existential threat, you know, you had to unload everything you could on him, you know, no matter what weaponry you had. And if you were a comedian and your weaponry was, you know, punchlines, well, man, you had to aim for that big orange man, that big orange boogeyman.
Something I note about the kind of work you do, and we're going to kill all of your jokes right now because that's the surest way to kill a joke is to explain it. But you take a lot of what I see as the logic of people who seriously think certain things that are weird or difficult for most people to handle or deal with or would just reject outright. And you extend that logic to make them the bad guy. That is, if people are so inclusive that you go a couple of steps further and say, no, you're not inclusive, actually, because you've rejected this other group by being so accepting.
Well, I happen to find I think people are infinitely interesting, and people are always going to be more interesting than any policy that you might have a problem with, you know? So the way that I look at it is, you know, what might be, you know, the idea of taxation, you know, that's something to debate, to talk about. But what's even more interesting is how people respond to taxation, or their thoughts on taxation, or what should be taxed and what should not be taxed. And I think that's where you're able to take what might be a boring subject and just make it interesting, because the characters commenting on it are interesting. And yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a very human thing to, you know, have, you know, hypocrisies that we all might have. And I think especially when people are so rooted in their politics, and that their identity is so wrapped up in, you know, who they vote for, and what their thumbnail emoji is, then it's even more fun to say, like, okay, well, what is a day like with this person? How do they navigate the world if so much of what makes them them, all of their atoms are sort of, you know, swept up in this, this political element. That's where I have the most fun.
I have heard, and I forget where I heard this from, it might have been Groucho Marx, it might have been Don Rickles, maybe, who said, you know, you got to punch up. Punching down is... It's not, you may make some people laugh, but punching up is vastly preferable. And at least on the cultural left, you know, in many ways, they're the establishment. And so punching up to the establishment and sort of the either hypocrisies or the ill ease that they have with even using certain words that a very short time ago were perfectly normal and acceptable, it's got to provide a great field for being a comedian.
Well, I have to say that I do take issue with the whole, what would you call it? A rubric of punching up versus punching down to begin with, because, I think that it's quite telling, how people, you know, navigate that, you know, the idea that I'm sorry, but since I am above you in this hierarchy, I'm not allowed to make fun of you. It's pretty condescending, you know, right off the bat. It's like, I'm sorry, you're beneath me.
I've been trying to avoid making fun of you during this entire interaction, so I hope you understand that I do.
Oh man, the smug, your smug is coming through my headphones.
My apologies.
These dynamics, they change, these power dynamics change, you know, relationship to relationship. And the idea that, you know, you can't, punch down and be funny or humorous, I think is kind of silly. An example that I have is I used to live in Brooklyn, and there was a guy, a homeless man who lived outside of a church. And, you know, homeless guy, obviously it's a situation you don't want to be in. But the guy was also an a-hole. The guy, no matter who you were, what you were wearing, if you ever walked by the guy, he always had something to say, you know? And it's like, here I am, you know, being dressed down by a homeless guy, you know, it's like, it's a little silly. So it's like, wait, now is he below me because he's homeless, but he's also above me because he's a much larger guy, because his ego is so big? He has a huge ego. He's like a homeless narcissist, which is amazing just to think about that. And it's like, well, how do I navigate that? How do I make that funny? I do feel like the same people who, you know, they want to, you know, be aligned with the whole punching up thing. I think like you said before, it's like, well, if you are the people in power, if you do hold, power in entertainment, in politics, in academia, well, then you're a target and you should be taking it. And rather than playing the victim anytime somebody, you know, casts aspersions.
Well, and that's, it's interesting because when you're trying to define what punching up is, there are whole groups of people who are ready to assign either victimhood or, you know, assign some sort of societal scorn to some group of people that they want to overcome to put themselves on top so that they can be more accepting, more tolerant, better people than you
or I. Well, I think also what happens is you find people who look for justifications to be awful to other human beings, right? So it's sort of like, if you're walking around, you're this person and you have all this, animosity, and you're like, man, I really need a target. But you turn around and you're like, oh, here's a disabled person. I can't take it out on them. And then it's like, oh, well, here's a, you know, here's a trans person. I can't do that. Or here's a, you know, here's a black person. But they're a black conservative. Okay. Now I get to take out a little bit of my animosity on this black conservative. So it's funny when you see when you see those things, you know, you try to do the, you try to do the math and see what the formula is that, you know, you have someone like Larry Elder, who was the, at some point, the white face of white, the black face of white supremacy, excuse me. And you're like, man, that's a lot of gymnastics just to say you can't stand the guy and wanting to find a reason to call him out on the stuff you disagree with.
What have been some of your more difficult moments doing comedy, especially when you're dealing with issues and areas of discussion that people find so difficult to talk about? I mean, comedy is supposed to be able to talk about things that maybe in polite conversation we try to avoid. Because we don't want to offend the people around
us. Yeah, I think I've been fortunate that that a lot of the stuff that I've put out has gotten good feedback. And I don't necessarily mean like good feedback and that like, oh, everyone thought it was funny. I think good feedback also that it's spurred conversation as well. But I think what's happened that a number of times that really annoyed me was that the conversation that it spurred drifted so far away from the fact that it was comedy that started it, that you start talking about all these other subjects, and then you have to remind yourself, wait a minute, I just made this all came about from like a 3-minute sketch, you know? One of the things that I found that would happen quite often in like these kinds of conversations is that if you were making fun of somebody like a beloved figure, then the only reason why you were doing it was out of hatred, you know, like the idea that you could only be making fun of this person because you hate them or you want to, you know, see people suffer, as opposed to, no, this person made themselves a perfect target for mockery. And I took the opportunity to mock this person and I'll do it again.
I think more than once you use the word scolds in this book to refer to groups of people. And scolds is such a great word because when I was a young person thinking about what a scold was, my vision of it was somebody dressed very traditionally, maybe like a desperately unhappy middle-aged woman who, in a sense, felt that the culture was getting away from her. And the world that she remembered was no more. And now when I think about scolds, I think of, well, very similar people, but ideologically, I imagine them to be very different.
Yeah, yeah. When you're describing that lady, like my heart sank, and I really wanted to help her. I really wanted to play the perfect Hallmark movie for her that would, you know, get her out of her her malaise. Yeah, with scolds, it is a great word, scold. It almost sounds like someone tossed like a hot, you know, pot of boiling water at you, scald and scold.
Yes, not to be confused with scald.
Yeah, I have a whole chapter on just scalding water, but I think there is a there seems to be a tendency. I don't know if it's necessarily new, but of wanting to be morally superior to others and wanting to, you know, wanting to bring that about in any way that you can. And, you know, the easiest way to do that is just to yell at people who are doing something that you don't think is right. And the mere act of yelling at that person, you know, puts you, you know, above them, you know. And
oh, and it's so satisfying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, like the universe, like everything aligns and you do that and it's like, it's totally warranted. And then other times it's not at all. So like I in the book, I talk about becoming a father during the pandemic. So I was, not only was I making comedy, but I was also making a baby. And, you know, at probably the scariest time, you know, in my life and, you know, for a lot of people, you know, in their lives and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, not only, you know, hey, what are we going to do tomorrow? But also like, are we going to live tomorrow? Like, are we going to be alive? Like what, you know, what is going on here? And, I was in Brooklyn Heights and it was such a miserable experience to even try to walk around the neighborhood. Because you would have, you know, these scolds who would find any opportunity to yell at you. You know, perhaps you walked past them too closely. That's a reason to yell at you. Maybe you're walking on the street by yourself without a mask on, not near anybody. And that's worth, you know, pulling over their bicycle and saying, put your mask on. Don't you care about people? You know? And so I had to deal with a lot of that. And it seemed to be like, oh, well, that's the age that we're living in. You know, it's sort of like the same online, you know, bitching is making its way into the streets.
But it seems like, and you do this pretty well, which is sort of lay out, you help people find ways to laugh at people who place themselves in a position of moral superiority. And that's comedy at its best, which is laughing at the people who cannot laugh at themselves.
Thank you. Goodbye. No, I appreciate that. I've noticed that there are so many people who have reached out to me and said, Lou, I really enjoy your stuff, but I can't share it. Because I don't know what repercussions there'll be like at work with, you know, friends. I'm going to see, you know, family over the weekend. I don't want there to be trouble, but thank you for, you know, sticking up and doing this. And, you know, part of me is like, oh, wow, I'm a hero. And then another part of me is like, come on, man, just share my stuff. Like, it's not that big of a deal, to do that. But, you know, I think we live in a time where there are so many people who are used to just being those types of annoying scolds, you know, constantly pontificating and virtue signaling, and nobody tells them to shut up or just calls them out and say, well, you know, you're full of BS. I would like to see a lot more of that. For sure, not just in comedy, but just also in everyday life, where it's like, look, there's no reason to allow bullies to get away with these shenanigans. That's how I'm going to say that word, shenanigans.
Highfalutin shenanigans, to be clear.
That's a tongue twister. Highfalutin shenanigans. Well, what's been on your mind with it? Well, is there anything that you've been watching that you think is really funny?
So I have, on Twitter and elsewhere, I will defend recent sketches and episodes of Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
And I get so much pushback from people. And I say, no, when they have done political comedy recently, it's been better than it was during the Trump presidency. The new guy who does Trump is the best. I mean, quite possibly the best I've ever heard or seen, because he does not just the things that Trump says, and he does not just the various vocal intonations that Trump has. He actually follows the way Donald Trump delivers speeches and the sort of stream of consciousness moving from this place to that place very quickly. And I feel like it is high art the way this guy does Trump.
Yeah, I think SNL is an interesting animal because it's been bad for so long, and people have been saying that forever, that it's been bad for so long. I mean, for, you know, 20 years they've been saying it, but it still persists. But I think during the Trump years, I think it created quite a few enemies. You know, I think there are a lot of people who really turned against SNL and aren't willing to accept that they've done something good, that they've done, you know, that they've hit a sketch out of the park, you know,
right.
And I think that I don't know if that's sort of another kind of like sign of our times, where it's like, you know, it's really tough to win the trust back of people who've gone the other way. And I think we're seeing that in, you know, just all of our different institutions, you know, higher education, politics, everything. People are just a lot more skeptical about it, and not willing to, I think, you know, put down their defenses long enough to perhaps enjoy even something like a comedy sketch.
Well, I've noticed, you know, like Stephen Colbert and other late night hosts became vastly more political and, you know, in a sense, less funny because they were trying to be serious. They were trying to make serious points and things like that. But I also understand these are hosts who have to entertain audiences, or at least appease audiences that are almost exclusively in New York and Los Angeles. And yet these shows are broadcast nationally. And it seems like a really difficult spot to be, that where you would love to be super political and just give your rant about the things you like and don't like. But if it's not funny, it's not funny, even if the crowd is cheering rather than laughing.
Yeah. And I think the political side of it, too, you put yourself in a tough spot because, you know, like I said earlier, it's so it's hypocrisy is just, you know, an endless wellspring of comedic material. So when you have late night hosts who every night are going out there and, you know, targeting, say, Trump or targeting the Republicans, it makes it really easy for people to point out and say, well, wait a minute, why aren't you calling out so-and-so who just did something just like that? Well, wait a second. Then you become, you know, the hypocritical clown. If you know, there's something to that. And you know, I don't know what I would do if I was hosting, if I had Colbert's spot. You know, maybe I would have, you know, dancing vaccines and that sort of thing. Who knows? Who knows what I would tell myself or what medication I would be taking every day to allow myself to do that. I'm willing to try.
So do you feel like you take on the left and right in equal measure? Because, you know, we've been talking about comedy having difficulty dealing with Donald Trump and having difficulty being funny in the face of this, you know, bombastic, often sort of laughable character who was president of the United States for 4 years. And that's not to say that the right broadly doesn't deserve heaps of scorn on a regular basis for a wide variety of things.
Yeah, I definitely find myself taking on targets that are more on the left, for sure. And I think, you know, one reason for that is when you have, you know, a great percentage of comedians who are on the left or left of center, and they're going after the right, when you're taking on the same subjects, you want to make sure that whatever take you have is going to be original. And it's a little, you know, it could be tough to take on those same subjects without coming off as a hack, you know? So the times when I was able to make jokes about Trump, I enjoyed it because it was like, cool, I have here's a different angle that I think other people aren't pointing out. But yeah, it's sort of like what I've, you know, what I found is like at that time, you know, when we were dealing with a, you know, an existential crisis that was Donald Trump, when you had all the focus on that person, it freed up all this other material for me and other comedians like me to take on. And that was great because it was like, I'm happy that SNL isn't making fun of Antifa. Thank God they're not making fun of Antifa because I get to make fun of them. Awesome. I'll take that anytime.
Comedian Lou Perez is author of the new book, That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore, on the death and rebirth of comedy. We spoke last week. Please give a rating to the Cato Daily Podcast on your podcast platform of choice and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.